Hello, this is Randy Thompson from the North Carolina Reading Service. Welcome to Music Review. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. For the next half hour, I shall be reading articles about music from such sources as the New York Times, the News and Observer, the Week Magazine, Rolling Stone, and Classic FM. Music Review is underwritten by Bill McClure, tuning pianos in the Raleigh area since 1968. For more information or to schedule a piano tuning appointment, please call 919-779-1755. This program is designed to provide the latest coverage of classical, folk, jazz, country, rock, and pop music news. But first, these musical trivia questions. Our trivia questions today come to us from history.com. This weekend celebrates a couple of notable events, Cinco de Mayo and Coronation Weekend. So, question number one, what is Cinco de Mayo? Is it A, it celebrates a victorious battle by Mexico over France? Is it B, it celebrates the day Pancho Villa lost in his attempt to join Germany against the U.S. in World War I? Is it C, it celebrates the arrival of summer in Mexico? Or is it D, it is the celebration of Mexican independence from Spain? Cinco de Mayo, what is that anyway? And question number two, King Charles's coronation this weekend will feature a new song by which of the following composers? Is it A, Philip Glass, B, Andrew Lloyd Webber, C, John Williams, D, Wynton Marsalis, or E, all of the above? So who will be contributing a new song at King Charles's coronation this weekend? The answers to these two important trivia questions will be given, as usual, at the end of today's program. Our transitions come to us from the website onthisday.com, and today, quote-unquote, is the weekend of May the 5th. Well, it was on this very day back in 1833 that composer Johannes Brahms was born, which was followed 7 years later, 1840, on this same day, that composer Peter Ilyich Tchaikovsky was born, which was followed 51 years after that, 1891, on this same day, with the grand opening and first public performance at the Music Hall, later called Carnegie Hall. The first performer at that grand opening? None other than Peter Ilyich Tchaikovsky. Today, in 1833, 1840, and 1891, respectively. Finally, in transitions, we have two deaths and two birthdays to announce. As noted in the LA Times, Harry Belafonte, who fueled an international calypso craze in the 1950s with his version of the Banana Boat Song, and whose long career in show business paralleled his offstage role as civil rights activist and globe-trotting humanitarian, died in New York on Tuesday, April 25th. NBC News reports that legendary singer-songwriter Gordon Lightfoot died at age 84 on May the 2nd. The Canadian folk singer topped the U.S. charts in 1974 with the song Sundown. And as noted in the April-May issue of AARP, the Time magazine, country singer Willie Nelson turned 90 years old on April 29th, and singer Pharrell Williams hit the Big 5-0 on April the 5th. Nicholas Dorenzo writes of Williams, "This dapper musician has a reputation as a spreader of joy, whether he's making people bop along to Happy, his infectious hit single, or opening the whimsical Good Time Hotel in Miami's South Beach, as he did in 2021. He's also known for his eye-catching style, so much so that French luxury brand Louis Vuitton hired Williams as its new creative director for menswear." Smokey Robinson's Cruisin' introduces our R&B music news. It's titled Smokey Robinson, My Life in Pictures. This is written by Janine Rubinstein in People magazine on the 8th of May, 2023. Smokey Robinson was 18 years old and sitting in a college engineering class when he heard one of his songs on the local radio station for the very first time. The professor's talking, and I've got my transistor radio plugged in my ear when the main disc jockey in Detroit goes, "Here's the Miracles with Got a Job," he recalls. In that surreptitious moment, Robinson, then working as a Western Union bike messenger while dreaming of making it big with his fledgling vocal group, knew his side hustle had turned into a full-time gig, recalls the music icon, now 83. "I jumped up, ran out of the class to the phone booth, called Claudette Rogers Robinson, his then girlfriend and bandmate, and said, 'Baby, our song is on the radio.' With the mentorship of Motown Records founder Berry Gordy, who produced Got a Job, Robinson burgeoned into a go-to hitmaker responsible for enduring classics like The Miracles' You've Really Got a Hold on Me, The Temptations' My Girl, and his 1979 solo single Cruisin', the song playing in the background now. 6 decades later, Robinson, who helped grow Motown Records into one of the most successful black-owned labels of all time, remembers the significance of his early days with Gordy, 93. "When we started performing down south, there'd be a rope barrier between white people and black people," he says. "A year later, they started coming together. Music is a barrier breaker." Along with his family, he's a dad to 3 children, songwriting remains his greatest joy. "I've never lost my zeal," says Robinson, whose silky tenor still shines on Gasmus, his 26th album, out on April the 28th. "Everybody gets a gift. I thank God every day for providing me with mine." And in music research and technology, we have this. Some 19th century physicians thought music could infect the brain. When it comes to music in the brain, medicine has come a long way. This is written by Helen Thompson. By Smithsonian, titled Brain Matters. Today, we associate music with emotion and artistry. It's used in medical therapy and activates the same region of the brain at complex mathematical formulas. This largely positive image has strong roots in history as well. But with the opponents came the naysayers. Writing for Brain Decoder, Kate Bangley delves into the long history of music's complicated relationship with medicine in the United States and Europe. Bangley points to a new paper reviewing music's reputation as a disease by James Canaway, a historian at Newcastle University. Until the 1600s and 1700s, music had a pretty positive image, linked with a sort of universal harmony and health. But as scientists learned about the auditory nerves in the brain, some physicians perceived music as a threat and an overstimulant. According to a subset of medical scholars, listening to too much music could be dangerous, inducing headaches and perhaps even death. By the time the 1800s rolled around, music was a full-blown pathogen, according to medicine, literature, and etiquette books. Excessive music, whether in audience or performance, was associated by some researchers with moral degradation and depravity. When American neurologist George Beard coined quote-unquote nervous exhaustion as a mental condition called neurasthenia, he cited music as a cause of the illness. Women, of course, were continually linked to the dangers of music. In the 17th and 18th centuries, physicians thought the fairer sex had weak nerves and were prone to fainting. They warned that excessive keyboard playing could aggravate such issues. Gynecologists thought music might be too sexy for women or that it could lead to heavy menstrual cycles. On the flip side, others linked it to infertility and reproductive problems. Victorian researchers also thought that music talent might be more prevalent among homosexuals. Musical pathology continued into the 20th century. Political parties, the Third Reich in Germany, and the Soviets in Russia specifically, capitalized on the negative undertones put forth by medicine and targeted specific genres to bolster their causes. In the U.S., listening to too much jazz came with social and moral symptoms. Even today, psychologists have linked music to addiction and mused on how it might affect the psyche, Bagley notes. Needless to say, neuroscience and psychology have come a long way. Scientists now know a lot more about how the brain processes music. While listening to music at a high volume for a long period of time can be psychologically straining as well as damaging to the eardrum, it's not the music itself that does the damage. It's the decibel levels. Whatever you might think about the dregs of pop music today, listening to a Taylor Swift probably won't kill you.
You, who are on the road, must have a code that you can live by, and so become yourself, because the past is just a goodbye. Teach your children well.
Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young's Teach Your Children introduces our rock and pop music news. It's an article titled Upfront, the A-List, Seven Life Lessons from Graham Nash. Published in AARP, the magazine, April-May 2023 issue, Rob Tannenbaum, the writer. Number one, music is honesty. When you're writing songs, you have to tell the truth to reflect the times. Most of the choices I've made started with my mother and father telling me, follow your heart and you won't go wrong. Number two, find your place. I came to New York City with the Hollies for my first time in 1965. It thrilled me. Wait, I can have a cheeseburger delivered in 5 minutes? What a country is this? I've never wanted to go back to England, and I never did. Number three, take leaps of faith. The first time I sang with David Crosby and Stephen Stills, there was no doubt what I had to do. I was already in a famous band, and we had been famous for 7 years. People thought I was crazy to leave the Hollies, give up all the women, the money, and the fame. They had not heard me, David and Stephen, sing, but I had. Number four, collab is good. I played Teach Your Children, the song playing in the background now, for Stephen when I had just finished it. He said, pretty good song, Graham, but don't ever play it like that again. You sound like Henry VIII doing Greensleeves. This is how it should go. And he played a beautiful guitar part that turned it into a hit. I can only write songs for me. I can't write them for you. Number 5, Make Up Swiftly. David was my best friend for over 50 years, but eventually I had to distance myself from him. He had said terrible things about Neil Young's wife, actress Daryl Hannah, and others. When it's uncomfortable to be around a friend, it's time to move on. But his death on January the 18th was like an earthquake with those smaller earthquakes that happen afterwards. It wasn't until 2 or 3 days after he passed that I realized he was gone. The fact is, we were getting a little closer at the end. He had just left me a voicemail saying he wanted to talk, to apologize, and could we set up a time? And I heard from his son that he was ecstatic that we were going to reconnect. But then he was gone. Number 6, Sing for Change. In the 60s, we thought we could stop the Vietnam War if we riled people up with our songs. I still believe we can change the world. And number 7, In the End, We All Go Solo. The opening line of my new album is, I used to think that I could never love again. I used to think that I'd be all on my own. At 81 years old, one has to think about these things. We're all going to die alone, every single one of us, even though there may be somebody around. So how did you do on today's trivia questions? Well, the answer to our first question, what is Cinco de Mayo? Is it A, it celebrates a victorious battle by Mexico over France? Is it B, it celebrates the day Pancho Villa lost in his attempt to join Germany against the U.S. in World War I? Is it C, it celebrates the arrival of summer in Mexico? Or is it D, it is the celebration of Mexican independence from Spain? Correct answer. Answer A, a victorious battle by Mexico over France. As noted in an April 20th, 2023 article in History.com, Cinco de Mayo, or the 5th of May, is a holiday that celebrates the day of the Mexican Army's May the 5th, 1862 victory over France at the Battle of Puebla during the Franco-Mexican War. The day, which falls on Friday, May the 5th in 2023, is also known as Battle of Puebla Day. While it is a relatively minor holiday in Mexico, in the United States, Cinco de Mayo has evolved into a commemoration of Mexican culture and heritage, particularly in areas with large Mexican-American populations. Many people outside Mexico mistakenly believe that Cinco de Mayo is a celebration of Mexican independence, which was declared more than 50 years before the Battle of Puebla. Cinco de Mayo is not the Mexican Independence Day, which is on September the 16th. Instead, it commemorates a single battle. In 1861, Benito Juarez, a lawyer and member of the indigenous Zapotec tribe, was elected president of Mexico. At the time, the country was in financial ruin after years of internal strife, and the new president was forced to default on debt payments to European governments. In response, France, Britain, and Spain sent naval forces to Veracruz, Mexico, demanding repayment. Britain and Spain negotiated with Mexico and withdrew their forces. France, however, ruled by Napoleon III, decided to use the opportunity to carve an empire out of Mexican territory. Late in 1861, a well-armed French fleet stormed Veracruz, landing a large force of troops and driving President Juarez and his government into retreat. Certain that success would come swiftly, 6,000 French troops set out to attack Puebla de Los Angeles, a small town in east-central Mexico. From his new headquarters in the north, Juarez rounded up a ragtag force of 2,000 loyal men, many of them either indigenous Mexicans or of mixed ancestry, and sent them to Puebla. The vastly outnumbered and poorly supplied Mexicans, led by Texas-born General Ignacio Zaragoza, fortified the town and prepared for the French assault. On May the 5th, 1862, the French, supported by heavy artillery, led an assault on Puebla. The battle lasted from daybreak to early evening, and when the French finally retreated, they had lost nearly 500 soldiers. Fewer than 100 Mexicans had been killed in the clash. Although not a major strategic win in the overall war against the French, Zaragoza's success at the Battle of Puebla on May the 5th represented a great symbolic victory for the Mexican government and bolstered the resistance movement. In 1867, thanks in part to military support and political pressure from the United States, which was finally in a position to aid its besieged neighbor after the end of its civil war, France finally withdrew. For many Mexicans, however, May the 5th is a day like any other. It's not a federal holiday, so offices, banks, and stores remain open. In the United States, Cinco de Mayo is widely interpreted as a celebration of Mexican culture and heritage, in part because it is identified with the victory of indigenous Mexicans, such as Juarez, over European invaders during the Battle of Puebla. Today, revelers mark the occasion with parades, parties, mariachi music, Mexican folk dancing, and traditional foods such as tacos and mole poblana. In the U.S., some of the largest festivals are held in Los Angeles, Chicago, and Houston. And the answer to question two, King Charles's coronation this weekend will feature a new song by which of the following composers? Is that A, Philip Glass, B, Andrew Lloyd Webber, C, John Williams, D, Wynton Marsalis, or E, all of the above? Correct answer? Answer B, Andrew Lloyd Webber. As noted in History.com, English composer Baron Lloyd Webber is known for such West End and Broadway musicals as Evita, Jesus Christ Superstar, and Phantom of the Opera. King Charles has asked 12 special musicians to create new music for his coronation at Westminster Abbey. This is a chance to show off the talent of some of Britain's best composers and musicians. And by the way, coronations have been held at Westminster Abbey for over 950 years. Since William the Conqueror, every monarch, apart from Edward V and Edward VIII, that has been crowned has had a coronation ceremony at Westminster Abbey. There have been 39 coronations in Westminster Abbey since 1066. The ceremony itself begins when the sovereign is first presented to and acclaimed by the people. The sovereign then swears an oath to uphold the law and the church. Following that, the monarch is anointed with holy oil, invested with regalia, and crowned before receiving the homage of the subjects. At the start of the coronation ceremony, the Archbishop of Canterbury will introduce the king to the crowd. Next, King Charles will take an oath to protect the Church of England and the law. Then he will sit in an old wooden chair called the coronation chair, which was made in 1300, and will have holy oil put on their head, chest, and hands. After that, the king will be given a big golden orb and a scepter. Finally, the most important part, Charles is crowned with a special crown. He will move to the throne, and everyone will kneel down to show their respect. Queen Camilla will go through the same steps. King Charles will be crowned with the St. Edward's crown. The current crown is made of solid gold and has 244 precious stones on it. Queen Camilla will wear Queen Mary's crown, which is made of silver and gold and has 2,200 diamonds on it. Since the British monarch is believed to rule by divine right, the Archbishop of Canterbury pours holy oil to anoint each new monarch, infusing him or her with God's spirit and rendering them unassailable, says Tracy Borman, author of Crown and Scepter, A New History of the British Monarchy. Known as the Act of Consecration, this part of the ceremony is considered so sacred that it was the only portion of Elizabeth II's coronation that was not televised. Queen Elizabeth's 1953 coronation oil was made from a 17th century recipe that included olive oil, sesame seeds, and a perfume featuring roses, orange flowers, jasmine, musk, ambergris, and civet. The holy oil that will be used at Charles's coronation is vegan-friendly in order to reflect modern anti-animal cruelty sentiments. It is made with olive oil pressed just outside of Bethlehem and perfumed with essential oils such as sesame, rose, jasmine, cinnamon, neroli, benzoin, and amber and orange blossom. King Charles III will be the 40th reigning monarch to be crowned. Finally, as noted in a 4/26/23 article in ClassicFM.com, in celebration of His Majesty the King's coronation, Classic FM has launched Classic FM Celebrating the Coronation, a nonstop stream of the greatest celebratory classical music by British composers from Elgar and Coleridge Taylor to Handel and Holst. Designed to be the sound of your coronation celebrations, this playlist is the perfect soundtrack for street parties across this upcoming long May weekend. So let's close out today's program with Handel's 1748 Oratorio, Solomon. Well, we've run out of time for today's episode of Music Review. Be sure to tune in at the same time next week. This program is also available as a podcast after the broadcast in our website, ncreadingservice.org. As we leave you now, remember these words: kindness is a language which blind people see and deaf people hear. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. If you have a suggestion to music to feature on this program, please leave a message for me at 919-832-5138. I'm Randy Thompson, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Music Review, underwritten by Bill McClure, tuning pianos in the Raleigh area since 1968. For more information or to schedule a piano tuning, please call 919-779-1755. So long, until next time.